This is Colorado Matters from KCFR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Today we begin a three-part series on the federal farm bill and what it means for Coloradans. It's safe to say if you eat, you're affected by the farm bill. Government subsidies help control the cost of food, and for those who still can't afford it, the farm bill determines how much families get in food stamps. In a few minutes, we're going to speak with agricultural leaders in Colorado about what they'd like to see in the next farm bill. First, a report from Capitol Hill. Congress rewrites the farm bill every 5 years, and lawmakers say this time around there's less money to divvy up. Still, some fear there will be wasteful spending. Reporter Sarah Shimako explains.
The farm bill is a massive piece of legislation. A large part of it pays for the food stamp program. But nearly $80 billion will go towards farm programs. Much of the money will be paid out in subsidies to commodity farmers, those who grow wheat, cotton, sugar, and corn, for example. The government support payments are in place to provide farmers with a safety net when crop prices drop.
I think, generally speaking, farm subsidies are a bad idea.
Littleton Republican Tom Tancredo voted against the last farm bill. Subsidy programs, he says, skew the marketplace.
I can understand that there's a constituency for this, but on the other hand, I do what I believe is best for the nation as a whole. And I don't believe that, you know, these hundreds of billions of dollars in farm subsidies is a good thing for the nation.
Rural community advocates, environmentalists, and taxpayer groups are also critical of commodity payments. They say millions of dollars are being paid out in subsidies to people who don't actually grow anything and large wealthy farmers who don't actually need them. Michelle Perez is with the Washington-based think tank Environmental Working Group.
We should all care because it is taxpayer dollars, and it's close to $30 billion a year.
The nonprofit just released an online database. It discloses subsidy beneficiaries in every state. It shows Colorado commodity farmers received $380 million from 2003 to 2005, including one farmer who got more than $700,000.
Those folks do not need federal support anymore. They're large enough already, and if they continue receiving the support, all of the smaller beginning family farmers, minority farmers, and all the conservation programs will remain unfunded.
Some farmers and lawmakers are defending the payments. They say crop prices were low during those years and it became too difficult to keep their operations profitable. Grand Junction Democrat John Salazar says the dollar figures may seem like a lot, but modern farms are costly.
$1 million of expenses is almost just a small fraction of some of these big farms. For example, on my farm, I only farm 3,000 acres, but I'll bet you that my expenses are well over $1 million, $1.5 million a year. It's just so expensive. Fuel prices have gone up, fertilizer prices have gone up.
And without subsidies, Salazar says consumers would pay more for groceries. Americans, he says, spend the least amount of their income on food than anyone else in the world.
Farm policy over the last maybe 40, 50 years has not been one that really protects farmers. It really protects the consumer, and so that's what people should keep in mind. It's really a consumer subsidy is what it really is.
But Jason Gray doesn't buy it. He's an advocate with the Southern Rural Development Initiative.
The notion that the commodity programs puts food on the table is nonsense. Look, America doesn't even feed itself, much less feed the world.
Gray rather Congress shift the money from subsidy programs to help create jobs and infrastructure in rural towns. A group of House lawmakers has introduced legislation to phase out subsidies over several years and replace them with tax-free accounts. But given that farm lobbying and interest groups are well organized and well financed, many in Washington feel it will be tough to change the status quo. For KCFR News, I'm Sarah Shimako on Capitol Hill.
To learn more about what's at stake for Colorado farmers and the consumers who rely on the food they produce, we turn to Alan Fouts, president of the Colorado Farm Bureau, and to Lee Swenson, executive director of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union. It's nice to have both of you on Colorado Matters, and I'd like each of you to give me an example of something in the farm bill that your members are watching closely, something that will affect the life of a Colorado farmer. Alan, why don't you take that first?
Well, I think our farmers are watching the commodity payments to see exactly what happens with the commodity title of the farm bill. They're also watching the conservation title of the Farm Bill as well as an energy title.
Let's take the commodity, for example. What's their investment there?
The commodity title of Farm Bill is that portion of the Farm Bill which includes the direct payments, some of the loan programs that are particularly wheat growers and corn growers in this state utilize to help maintain their yearly income. And so those payments that go directly to them to help maintain their operations.
And they are looking at a smaller pot of money this year.
Yeah, significantly less money available this year than has been in the past. And that means that there's just going to be less money available for that portion of the Farm Bill that will directly affect our farmers and ranchers. I think one thing we need to understand is that of the total amount of monies that are spent in the Farm Bill, about 76% in this next Farm Bill will go to nutrition programs,
food stamps,
those things. So 24% of the Farm Bill will really be that portion that would be able to be utilized by our farms and ranches and rural development and energy and disaster payments and those things.
We're going to talk more about commodities in a few minutes, and as they have in the past, come under scrutiny from some. Let's ask Lee what your members will be looking at very closely in Colorado.
Well, along with Ellen, number one is a commodity title, but our members are looking for an inclusion of a permanent disaster program as a new initiative within the commodity title. But to complement that is what we can do in the area of conservation, energy, and rural development.
Let's talk about a permanent disaster. That may strike some as a kind of odd combination of terms. What do you mean when you say permanent disaster?
Well, a permanent disaster program would be available to assist producers immediately upon a loss of crop or livestock. In the case of Colorado, we saw the last number of years, I think about 5 to 6 years in a row, where crop producers have lost wheat production or corn production. We saw the blizzard of this last winter have a devastating effect on the livestock industry. We would have immediate assistance available without having to go back to Congress and beg for additional dollars.
Now, Alan, as I understand it, the president has said he would veto this. Is there support to override that veto?
I'm not sure whether there'd be support to override that veto or not. I do know that most of our agricultural states probably would be tend to be in favor of a permanent disaster fund.
But is your organization, I guess we should ask.
American Farm Bureau and Colorado Farm Bureau is in favor of a disaster fund. But I think we have to be very realistic here and say that today we're working with a finite pie, and if we put a permanent disaster fund in, that means that money has to come out of that 24% somewhere. So I don't know how that gets distributed. And that's where the argument and the discussion is taking place.
Well, Lee, what's your answer to that? I mean, if that means cuts in other areas of the Farm Bill that your members are going to rely on, are they willing to make that kind of sacrifice?
Well, yes. As this debate is unfolded, one of the things that is a target, has a big bullseye on it, is the direct payments. We're seeing relatively good prices right now, and yet the structure of the farm program has provided direct payments regardless of what the market price for commodities might be.
And this applies, for example, to corn.
Wheat.
High corn prices right now because of the demand for ethanol, for example.
Yeah, and yet direct payments are being made. And that's really gotten the attention of a lot of taxpayers and a lot of consumers. What we are proposing is to take a look at, can we reduce some of those direct payments but reallocate those dollars within the budget to cover the annual projected cost of a permanent disaster program? And we feel that the farmers would be better served because this would be a loss, you know, a reduction in direct payments, but the availability of dollars should they lose their crop. And when you lose a crop, even if prices are high, you have no income. This way you would have that income from the loss of crop through a disaster program.
Well, let's move on to the question of subsidies, because they have come under fire. Alan, why don't you be a bit more specific about what you think members are looking for and why?
Our farmers and ranchers have utilized those payments to maintain their farms and ranches in those periods of time when weather hasn't been very nice to us. And so we call them subsidy payments, and that's really what they are. But I think one thing we have to keep in mind is it's those payments that maintain a cheap, abundant, safe food supply for all of our citizens and here in the United States. And so everybody enjoys the ability to go out and, you know, we've got boats and RVs and we have our little fun little things we like to do. And part of that is because we have the cheap food supply, which is being supported through some of our commodity programs. So I think it's important that we maintain that. It's a national security issue. It's a food security issue.
You're saying that it frees up money for discretionary income, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Critics say that commodity subsidies unfairly benefit large corporate farms rather than provide assistance for the small farmers. The Environmental Working Group, as we've heard, says that in Colorado, 10% of the farms get 66% of the payments. Is that fair?
Well, I agree with the statement. The numbers are there.
The numbers are there.
Now, let's go back and look at this just a little bit. I would ask one question. What is a farm program designed to do? In my mind, it's designed to provide a safe, abundant, cheap food supply. Now, if you look at American agriculture and the statistics in Colorado agriculture mirror very closely U.S. agriculture, there's like 2.1 million farms in the United States. But it's interesting in the United States that only 386 farms produce 10% of that production of food and fiber. 386 farms in the whole United States.
So you're saying that if commodity subsidies are distributed unevenly, it's because there's an actual uneven production.
That's my whole point. If we're going to use the farm program as a mechanism to provide this food supply that we want, then why shouldn't the subsidy payments go to those who are actually doing the production of the food and fiber?
It is not your feeling that the farm bill should be directed to help small farmers, that the priority should
be... Well, I'm not sure what a small farmer is. I mean, all of us participate in the farm program, so if we're farming at all, but it's based on a percentage of what you grow and your acreages that you grow, and so everybody gets to have a piece of it. The larger farm you have, obviously, the higher that payment is going to be, but it's a fact that 144,000 farms in the United States are producing 75% of food. Why shouldn't they get that percentage of the share of those subsidy payments?
Lee from the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, to this question of distribution.
Well, I think there's where a difference does arise between the American Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union. Ellen explained it exactly right. What's happening is that the payments continue to go out no matter how large you get. In fact, it raises the age-old question, does unlimited payments encourage producers to get larger? Does it drive up land costs for beginning farmers to enter agriculture? And is that the proper role for government programs? Should we continue to support an agricultural unit no matter how big it gets? And I think what the difference is that the Farmers Union does support payment limitations so that we can provide that income support when prices are low, but that there be a limit on it. And those that want to get bigger, absolutely, in the free market system, can get bigger. But they don't get bigger at the government trough.
I guess I'd like to relate both of these arguments to the consumer. Under your vision of the Farm Bill, how does the consumer benefit, Alan?
The consumer benefits from the Farm Bill because there's that price support system that's there that in periods of time when particularly Mother Nature weather is rough to the farmer, then there's something to fall back to. I'm not particularly concerned about the size of the farm because every farm out there has a risk, and the larger the farm, the larger the risk. But I don't see the Farm Bill as a social engineering project. I see it as something to maintain the food production system that we have in the United States. And for me, it doesn't make any difference how large or how small that system is. We still need to maintain that because of a national security issue.
And Lee, if your vision of the Farm Bill were to become law, that is perhaps caps on these kinds of payments, how does the consumer benefit? What does that mean to the person with food on their table?
Well, first of all, it's the production of safe, abundant, nutritious supply of food at a very affordable price. Second, it provides the dollars necessary to help those in the consuming market that are less fortunate. It gives us the dollars to continue to fund the school lunch program, the school breakfast program, the food stamp program, but also to help support the development of farmers' markets. One of the strongest benefits to consumers and to the rural communities across this country is if we can get more of a commitment of dollars to build a local and regional food supply system creating jobs for consumers and people in our rural communities, even our urban communities, that help sustain a local supply of food. And that's the benefit that could come through a restructured farm program.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. My guests are Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, Lee Swenson, and President of the Colorado Farm Bureau, Alan Fouts. We're discussing renewal of the federal farm bill and how it relates to Coloradans. The conversation continues after a break. This is Colorado Matters from KCFR News. It's Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. This is the first day in our three-part series on how the federal farm bill, now before Congress, relates to Coloradans. My guests are Colorado Farm Bureau President Alan Fouts and Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, Lee Swenson. Before the break, we were talking about subsidy programs that help support the price of crops. Some people want to move funding from subsidies into conservation programs, which pay farmers to take land out of production or reward them for sustainable farming. Here's Alan Fouts of the Colorado Farm Bureau.
Conservation is always an important piece to our discussion. We do use those conservation funds here in the West, but what is interesting in the Farm Bill is that the conservation programs that we now have tend to work better in the Midwest and the Southeast than they do in the West.
Explain that for listeners. Why is it that these programs tend to favor Midwestern farms? What is it about them?
Well, some of the requirements that are placed tend to fit a different type of agriculture than what we have out here.
Uh-huh.
They tend to fit areas with a little more rain, and some of those climatic conditions are a little bit different than they do out here. Now, that's not to say that they don't work here and that we don't have our growers using them. But what worries me is if we begin to shift a lot of, for example, the commodity payments to conservation payments, for those of us in the West, it doesn't work quite as well. I mean, we tend to lose just a little bit in that shift. If we do conservation, I want to see working conservation rather than land retirement programs. Programs like Conservation Reserve Program, Conservation Reserve Enhanced Programs, they have been beneficial in a lot of areas because they have prevented erosion, particularly wind erosion in Colorado, but they have taken that land out of production. And I think there's ways that we can maintain the vegetation. There are ways that we can farm for whatever, whether it's energy or whether it's food production, and maintain the environmentally and sustainable systems under working land conditions rather than under just retiring that land from any kind of production at all and just letting it wildlife and so forth be there.
And Lee, your thoughts on conservation programs in this farm bill and what your members are looking for?
Well, first of all, conservation programs are critically important to farmers and ranchers throughout the state of Colorado. In Colorado, we have the highest percentage of croppable acres enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program. And with that, we have seen the growth in wildlife and pheasant hunting, grouse hunting, quail, a real regeneration of some economic development associated with that, plus the benefit derived then of stopping much of the wind erosion that plagued a lot of the eastern plains. So conservation has played a very critical role and will continue to. But I think Alan raised a great point, and that is that the Conservation Security Program, which was initially drafted in the 2002 Farm Bill, but inadequately funded, would be a great conservation program to work with working landscapes. In other words, being able to put in buffer strips where appropriate to help protect water quality, yet allow you to produce your crops.
Let's just be clear for listeners. There are several different kinds of conservation programs. One that would have farmers leave the land unfarmed, and ones that encourage farming practices that are more sustainable. You're saying you'd like to see more funding to that latter, which I also think Alan was alluding to.
Well, absolutely. But the Conservation Reserve Program, which is a retirement program, is going to continue and plays a very critical role in Colorado for conservation for the farmers and ranchers that have participated. But it's important in the next Farm Bill to adequately fund the Conservation Security Program, which will allow you to adapt conservation practices within your farming practices and your ranching practices and receive appropriate compensation for conducting those conservation practices.
Gentlemen, perhaps you can leave us with this. Do you see this farm bill as a shift at all in philosophy or a continuation of the philosophy of previous farm bills. Alan, I'll give you the first on that and Lee the last word on that.
Well, no, I don't see a fundamental shift taking place over the 2002 Farm Bill. I think what we're going to see are minor changes within what the old 2002 Farm Bill was. There may be an addition of a permanent disaster fund. Where those monies come from within this pie, I'm not sure. That's where Lee and I have discussions about. But I think overall, most of our farm organizations are pretty well satisfied with the 2002 Farm Bill and basically would like to maintain that concept if we could.
And Lee?
Well, I think in the Ag Committee markup, Ellen may be right in that the 2002 Farm Bill will be the model. But I think we're underestimating the debate that may unfold on both the House and the Senate floor. We see more effort by conservation groups, by wildlife groups, of what's going to happen in the area of the conservation title. As we know, Congress is giving more attention right now to domestic energy policy than we've seen in many decades. And so I think there could be some significant shifts that come about. I really think that we're just on the eve as to what might transpire over the debate of this farm policy development. Could be a wild ride for the farm bill this go-round.
Well, gentlemen, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.
Lee Swenson is Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union. Alan Fouts is President of the Colorado Farm Bureau. Our series on the Farm Bill continues tomorrow with a look at what organic farmers want to see from Congress.